Greetings, podcast listeners, and welcome to another episode of All Things Thor, the podcast about all things Tom Thor, Thor Darson. I'm your host, Kurt Schneider, and on this episode of All Things Thor, Tom is going to begin the end of the story of how he became an Imagineer and created the Journey to the Center of the Earth attraction for Tokyo DisneySea. It's been a great story so far, and I'm looking forward to hearing the conclusion, as I'm sure you are too. So with that being said, let me turn the microphone over to Tom, and he can complete, or almost complete, his tale of becoming an Imagineer. Take it away, Tom.
Hi, okay. Well, I'm glad to be back on here, and, I think I'm going to kind of start wrapping it up on the Becoming Imagineer series part of All Things Thor. And it's not that we won't revisit it in the future. I think that there's going to be guests that are going to come on from my friends from Imagineering and other areas of themed entertainment and Tiki and everything that... I'm sure Disney experiences will come up again, and I'll tell more about it. But I'd like to wrap up this as quickly as possible on this focused area. So, last time we were talking, I kind of left off with some of the other projects I was working on. I wanted to kind of share that. At the same time I was working on Journey to the Center of the Earth at Imagineering, I was working on other attractions for Tokyo Disney Seas, especially primarily in the Mysterious Island area, but I did touch on other areas. One was there was a ride that was going to be happening called Storm Chaser. And it was a motion-based simulator, so think of Star Tours at Disneyland. But this was an adventure ride where you were supposedly in this special vehicle that went up into a actual hurricane and tornado, and that you got to go into this scientific vehicle that was going to go inside of a tornado and see what it was like and what it felt like and all this kind of stuff. And it was pretty cool. But for some reason, and I really don't know the reasons, because I wasn't assigned to it at that time, but they came to me while I was working on Journey to the Center of the Earth and said, hey, would you take a pass at a ride that could be an alternative to this if we want to have some choices as to what to do with this? So it still had to be a motion-based simulator, so I had to come up with something. And I came up with this underwater ride that I referred to before called the Undersea Grand Prix. And it was basically, I made up this story about sometime in the future where fish and aquatic creatures and humans, it was sort of a, could have been in the future, could have been in the past. It was a weird kind of a sci-fi context. But the sea creatures that were half human and half sea creature were going to have a race underwater with humans, with these submarines. And these were very wild submarines that were designed to look like they were made of parts inspired by sea creatures and aquatic life, and they were really cool. And the main vehicle was a whale, and we were at the gondola bottom of a whale. You can see all this on the internet if you look up Tribute to Tom Thor Darson. It was done by a couple of different sites. One was called Disney and More. And if you look up Disney and More, Tribute to Tom Thor Darson, you'll see several articles on my work, including touching on the Undersea Grand Prix. But Anyway, so I was working on that as well as the initial concepts for the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea ride for Mysterious Island. And this was dry for wet, meaning they didn't want to deal with the submarine aspects again with real water. They wanted this to be something more looking like you were underwater, but really no water at all. You're in kind of a submersible that was supposed to be a little vehicle sub, a mini sub that Captain Nemo created. And so you went inside and experienced this whole adventure that looked out the portholes of this little mini sub. And there was no water at all. It was just set work and animatronics, but it was supposed to feel like you were underwater. And there was windows that were created, they had bubbles that came up in laminated glass so that it kind of added to the effect. And so I just, at that time, there was no real storyline. I just came up with a whole bunch of artwork and storyboards of what could happen maybe. And it was really a lot of fun. And again, that's also, you'll see some of those on the Mouse Planet, I think, did a series on it on the internet, a blog. And again, also Disney and More. You can see some of my storyboards and things on that particular ride. So anyway, I was juggling a lot of plates because my primary ride I was assigned to, of course, was Journey to the Center of the Earth. But these other rides, they had me take a crack at because our team was actually pretty small at that time. It was condensed. And my personal opinion was that it was one of the most productive things ever to have a very lean team creatively before you get too much middle management and different things in there. We just were very efficient, and all of the people that were there were multi-talented. We could wear a lot of hats, you know. I did a little bit of writing. I did a lot of artwork. I did sculpting. I did a lot of things. So, the whole team was that way. And most of the people that were creatively heading up each attraction had those same sort of capabilities. And it was really fun then because we just jumped in there and got things done. And it was tremendous. I think it was probably the most creative and talented team I've ever worked for and with. And I can't speak for what it is like now at Imagineering. So maybe there are projects like that where that happens again. But this was a lean and mean team, and I'll never forget it. It was a wonderful experience. We're kind of moving forward, and I'm working more and more and more on different parts of the model and as far as the maquettes. And then we're doing a lot of mock-ups too. We spent a lot of time proving the effects. So the special effects guys, you know, continued to set up a lot of the different things that I had proposed. And we would go to the buildings where these mock-ups, set work were all created so that we could see what it was really going to look like. And, so about this time, though, the team, it started to grow. And, we're like 2 years into development on this thing. And, in my mind, I had been through this ride 1,000 times. So, it was I had every square inch of this ride figured out in my brain, from every square foot of rock and how the rock work and the caves were going to look through the movements of the animatronic characters and everything. It was embedded in my brain. And again, this was before we did simulations on computer. So, we didn't have the luxury of a lot of the things they do now. We had drawings and paintings and 1-inch scale models that we had to stick our head down into and imagine ourselves being small and experiencing the ride. So, you know, there was a lot of imagination still for everybody that had to be exercised quite a bit in between this stage and what something actually would be when it was built, you know, with full lighting and soundtracks and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so right about this time, I'm going to get into something here that's really hard for me. I've always promised you guys I'm going to be transparent and just share this like like I experienced it. And I'm going to be honest with you that some of this is really difficult for me. So bear with me. And, you know, just share the experience with me for what it was. And know that all I'm doing is being honest with you here about really the things that unfolded. And so right around this time, there was a as the project grew, they brought in more involvement with a role of somebody called a show producer. The show producer there has, you know, the responsibility of kind of watching what's happening with creative and making sure that things stay in budget. And a lot of times they have to represent the concept, you know, to the client more often. And they have the responsibility of kind of like, you know, making sure the right casting is there of the talent and getting talent for when needed, you know. They're, you know, kind of have all that responsibility. So they work with the project manager, etc. So at this time, the project or the show producer started to get more involved with me, because before they all these guys just kind of let me take off and just kind of stepped back. And but now the show producer that was assigned started getting more involved with me. And so there was more meetings, of course, and more discussions and more negotiating about, you know, what was important, what wasn't, and what things needed to be edited, and how close we were to getting, you know, to staying on budget and on track. And this, I'm not going to name names, like I said, because I don't want to, I'm not going to do the same thing that I've had done to me in the past. And I'm not going to throw anybody particular under the bus. So I'm going to be very, very vague intentionally, because I have, that's just the way I am. I just don't, I'm not the type of person who has to get back at people who maybe have done something that has affected me negatively. I usually just move forward. And excuse me if I'm rambling, because again, this is really difficult for me. This is really hard for me to put into words and relive. I mean, quite frankly, you can tell I've procrastinated doing this segment because I have not wanted to revisit it. But I just have to be forthright and honest. So this show producer, you know, had a decent rapport with them. You know, they were standoffish at times. Sometimes I couldn't tell what they were thinking. Sometimes, you know, but they're generally supportive, but, you know, not a buddy-buddy type of relationship with this person. But, they had been around for a while at Disney. They had been through other projects, and so they were, you could say they considered themselves very seasoned, and they had a very good political rapport with a lot of other management there, which is a huge thing at any big corporation, especially at Disney or at any, you know, comparable sized company. And I don't know. To be honest with you, from the get-go, there was something I didn't trust about this person. I think they had kind of spent their time there and had one foot out the door. And I won't get into specifics, but there was some even some things that were left behind. A Xerox machine that was outside my office that showed me that this person was... had goals outside of Disney and different aspirations that I didn't necessarily share. But I did my job as a team member. You know, you got to do that when you're part of the team. You remind yourself of that, right? You're not always it's not always a situation where everyone is in love with each other, right? And you have to work as a team. It's like being on a big pirate ship, you know. You got some people are great buddies, other people are not. So you just move forward and you try to focus on your work, and I try to focus on my dream and my incredibly intoxicated devotion I had to this ride. And so as my workload got more and more and more, the show producer thought it might be a good idea to get me an assistant designer, kind of help me out. And so I guess he just took it upon himself to do that. I didn't get a chance to interview anybody or anything like that, which I think would have been nice had I had a chance to have a part in who this person might be that was going to take on this role that was, to me, very personal, because they were stepping into things that were already designed for, you know, quite some time, and it was a very personal attraction for me. But this show producer went ahead and hired somebody, and so to quote, take the pressure off me, and I went along with it, and turns out, I was kind of excited about it, actually. I mean, I was teaching at night at Art Center College of Design, Entertainment Design, and I like to teach. I like to share what I do, and I like to share, you know, little tricks and of the trade that I've learned, and I really enjoy mentoring. And so part of what was sold to me was I was to kind of mentor this person, and they were going to shadow me, and that's how it started out. And I enjoyed it, frankly. I seemed to have a good rapport with this person, and a couple of weeks into it, actually, they were very forthright with me, and kind of had a little mini, not really a breakdown, but they emotionally expressed themselves, you know, that this was really an overwhelming experience and very initially intimidating to come into Disney Imagineering, and they really wanted to do justice to everyone's faith in them, and was important to them to do a good job for their family and themselves personally. And so I, I said, don't worry about it. You know, you're going to be fine. I'll help you all I can. And I did that. This person wanted to learn how to sculpt the maquettes that I did out of, polymer clay. And so I taught them how to do that, how to build the armatures, and how to work with the polymer clay, and what tools to get. And so I was excited for them to learn that, and they did, and they did I'd say a damn good job. That very talented. Even though, you know, inside I wanted to do these same maquettes for the attraction I had envisioned all this time, I had to surrender some of it because that's just what you do, you know, when you're on a team, especially when you're at Disney. I mean, something's not completely made by one person. There's no one attraction out there that one person did everything on. You'll even look at the ones in the past where Walt would have different artists taking a crack at a ride or attraction. You know, there'd be a few people that took a crack at what became the Haunted Mansion, or there's, you know, different things like that. You know, they all, you know, Mary Blair and Rolly Crump, you know, worked on It's a Small World, from what I understand. And you know, so you got to be willing to share a little bit. And this was my, again, this was my vision of what Imagineering was all about. And it was ingrained in me on my own before I went in there that this is what, how I was going to see things there. And how it, you know, that was the magic to me. And I couldn't wait to, you know, to be part of it. So I continued, you know, to work with this assistant, and I continued to do, you know, what I was asked to do. And things got more complex. We were, I was developing the characters and figuring out what their movements were going to be. I did a ton of drawings showing exactly what their animations were going to be, what was going to move, and even proposed how it might work. The story started to change a little bit. They brought a writer in about this time, and we had, you know, a certain amount of time, you know, that we had to, all this whole story had to fit into, I can't remember what the final amount of time was, let's say 3 minutes, you know. And we had to be streamlined, and the writer had to get in there and figure out how to make this all make sense from a story standpoint. And we worked very tightly together. So the storyboard that was pinned up kept changing. And so this assistant, part of what they were doing was helping me while I was working on these other design aspects, change the storyboard. So I had a certain technique I had developed where I would do my drawings, and then I'd have an architectural brown line with some tone on the back made with tone, with this brownish sepia tone on this special paper by the blueprint department there at Disney. And I would then go in over my brown line sketches and use white and dark brown Prismacolor pencil. And I would make these very luminescent frames, the storyboard. So I was thinking about lighting. I was thinking about all kinds of stuff. So I was able to really bring a lot of light and luminosity and mood and feeling into my storyboards. And they were very well received by everybody. And so the show producer asked me if I could teach them that technique, and so that they could fill in the gaps as the story changed. So I did that. Even though part of me didn't want to do that, because it was something I did. It was my technique. It was something I developed. But I offered that, and I did that because, again, I wanted to share. I wanted to be an educator, and that's what I did. What transpired next is something I have been trying to forget for the last couple of decades, frankly. My coworkers brought a lot of things to my attention later that I was oblivious to or didn't believe. Again, this part, it starts getting difficult for me to talk about this because I have to kind of relive it. I've got an extremely detailed memory, by the way, so I remember vivid details of things. And that's a blessing and it's a curse. My friends often have said, you know, you have a scary memory for the past. I can remember details all the way back to my middle school and grammar school days that blow my friends' minds when I can reiterate them. So I've got a very sharp memory, and so when I tell things like this, it's based on very vivid and specific memories of things that occur. You can be sure of that. So what happens next is I end up getting feeling sick one day and having to call in sick. It turns out that my doctor saw me because I had this rash all over my chest and starting on my face, and I had a fever and the whole bit. And long story short, turns out I had chicken pox. I never got chicken pox as a kid. But now at 33 years old, what happens? I get chicken pox. So, I called in to work and said, guess what, guys? It looks like doctor says I can't come to work for a couple of weeks. I'm in quarantine because I got chicken pox. So, called in. And about a week transpires of me laying in bed and, everyone continuing to go about their business there. And I get a phone call, and it was from the guy who headed up this project, and I won't mention any names, and they say to me, Tom, and I go, yeah, here I'm kind of excited because I see the call come in and saw it was from Imagineering, and then when I heard the voice of this person, I thought they were calling to see how I was feeling because it was about a week into having chicken pox. It was kind of excited, you know, to tell them I was doing okay, but it was kind of sucked to be laying here. And well, in this emotionless tone, this person proceeds to tell me, you know what, I have something I need to inform you of. I'm going, okay. And I was like, what's going on here? This guy who was usually very animated just sounded like, a zombie. And they said, I'm pulling you off the project, pulling you off your ride. What are you talking about? I said, is it because I'm home? I've got chicken pox. I can't come to work. I actually legally can't come. Or my doctor says I can't. And he goes, no. It's because of an incident that was reported by your assistant. It's regarding you abusing their services and giving them too much work, an unhealthy amount of your work that you should be doing, that you were giving to your assistant. And that this assistant was, you know, very emotionally upset about this and was very avid about this. And so I had a discussion with the producers, and it sounds like what you did is grounds for pulling you from the project. And I was absolutely dumbfounded. I mean, I don't know even what word to use. Beyond words, never ever was I guilty of this or did anything like this in my entire career, pawn off my work. As a matter of fact, I was so in love with what I did that sharing was the hardest thing. Sharing stuff I wanted to do, especially on this ride, any ticket attraction I have the opportunity to do. I was giving it 150%. And yet, whatever this assistant said, however they phrased it or whatever type of way they presented it to them, this upper management didn't want to fight it or anything. And they didn't even want to hear my side of the story or that there was another side of the story. They just said, you're off the project and we've made a decision. So when you come back, you're going to be, we're moving your stuff into a front office up, you know, in general Imagineering up near administration. I didn't know what to say. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe, first of all, that what I was hearing, that this assistant would have said something like that. I mean, no one ever said anything to me. They didn't come to me and ever say they were overworked. I won't understand it to this day. I mean, my heart and passion and mind that created this ride, it was just decimated all in that, after that phone call. It was the most unjust and humiliating and hurtful experiences of my career and my life, actually. And I'm to this day, I'm haunted by this. I have nightmares about it. And I relive this. And I've even been through and continue to seek therapy to try to let this go. But it is so difficult for me to let go. Even though I do everything, it still is ingrained in the back of my brain and in my soul, you know, because it was such a tragic experience. And it was so unjust. It was like someone being sent to prison for 20 years who didn't commit a crime. And the magic and the pixie dust, it emptied, it emptied from my pocket like a broken hourglass, you know, you could say. But I decided, you know what? Damn it. I got to fight this. And as I was laying in bed, I wish I hadn't been just laying in bed. I wish I had been there, but I had another week I had to go. And so what I said is, I'm going to fight this. This is just not right. I don't know what details or how this could happen, and I'm going to go straight to administration and fight this and try to figure out what in God's name transpired here and prove to them that whatever this person said was bullshit. And so I laid in bed for the remainder of that week and just tossed and turned. And as the chicken pox slowly faded on my skin, well, you know, so did my spirit and my faith in my destiny and life and trust and Disney magic. And I guess you could say my mouse ears were sagging and flopping like a baby elephant in Nairobi. You know, I was truly distraught. And I will stop this right here and continue in the next episode, which is following this really fast after this one. It's not going to be much time. So maybe in the next few days. All right. I'll give you more on this. And thank you for listening.